Hey, 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 this is Lisa A., and you're listening to Who's That Star on LCC Connect at Lansing Community College. Who's That Star is a behind-the-scenes show where I sit down and talk with the employees at the college. This is an inside look at LCC where you will have a chance to learn about their passions, projects, what inspires them both at work and in their personal lives. I'm your host, Lisa Alexander. I'm so excited to get a chance to talk to all the people who make LCC great. This show is for you to get to know the people that work at Lansing Community College a little bit more and see what makes them tick. Are you ready? Okay, let's go see who's today's star. Welcome back to another edition of Who's That Star. Today we have a star that was born and raised in Lansing, LA area. Woohoo! This star attended Waverly High School. I'm not going to cheer as loud for Waverly High School because she's not a Viking, but yay, Lansing. Our star earned her associate's degree from Lansing Community College in psychology and went on to earn a bachelor's degree in social work. She has an extensive background in social work and community outreach. Before coming to LCC, she served as the Street Outreach and Interventions Coordinator for Child and Family Charities Gateway Youth Service Division from August 2014 to September 2022. In this role, she offered crisis intervention services, supported case managers in developing and executing service plans, just to name a few of the duties. In addition to her professional experience, this star provides leadership for her community and participates in civil engagement activity. She served as the vice president of the Organization of Latino Social Workers Michigan chapter from 2011 to July of 2019 and currently holds the position of co-chair of the Hispanic Heritage Committee at Lansing Community College since March 2023. This star describes herself as a highly motivated and compassionate individual dedicated to making a positive impact in her community through work and civic engagement. All right, everybody, are you ready to learn who's today's star? Drum roll, please. Today's star is
Sofia Estrada Ferreira.
Sophia, we are so glad to have you here on Who's That Star today.
I'm glad to be here.
All right, let's get it. Can you tell me a little bit about who you are and what's important to you in your life right now?
Ooh, there's so much. But the biggest thing is I'm a mom of two, and I work here at the college, and I help students like myself, first-gen students, helping them navigate the system.
Okay, to carry that a little further, like what your work at LCC is and what are your roles?
Yeah, so I am the Perkins Special Populations Coordinator, and I work with occupational students that meet what we call special populations. So students that may have been experiencing foster care, students that have experienced homelessness, returning students that are parents, English as a second language students, students that are underemployed, students that have veteran background, just a various different, we call special populations.
Okay, yeah, no, that makes sense. Like, I know that everybody's special, but they identify, like, these different populations because they have similar needs sometimes. Now, is Perkins grant over specific special populations, or is there different areas of Perkins that you know of?
Yeah, so Perkins, a kind of over occupational program. So anybody what the state has approved is occupational.
So there's a list.
There's a list, okay. And it's on our website, okay, too. So I'm like, there's a lot of them. I can't tell you every one of them.
Right.
But yes.
But you're not, Sophia, you're not saying, oh, this is special population.
Right.
Okay.
But the caveat for my role that goes again, that is different from other roles that might be Perkins funded, is that I work specifically with students that are in an occupational program that meet those 10 categories, one out of those 10.
Gotcha.
So it's even more specific.
Wow, it is. So that, so you don't have a large population that you're working with, is it? Or is it? It could be large.
It could be large.
Because there's different people in those majors, so yeah.
Yeah, it could be large. Right now, it's a smaller group because my role is 100% new.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, it's smaller than just an occupational student. They have to meet eligibility based on the 10 criteria.
Right. So it's not, okay, you just in welding. Is that an occupation?
Yep, that is.
So it's not that you just in welding. There's other criteria that you have to meet in order to work with Sophia, right?
Right.
Okay, yeah. And so, because I don't just want your phone to be blowing up. You could call out and ask it, see whether or not, but I know this information too is also on the website.
On our website,
right?
Yep.
So when you're working with those students, what services do you provide for them in your role?
I am kind of like the connector piece. I assess, I kind of get a sense of what they need. If they need, let's get an example. If I'm working with a returning student that has children, maybe they have questions about childcare. So then I refer them to our Adult Resource Center to apply for those funds. Mm-hmm. If they have questions about their financial aid, then I'll connect them back to their financial aid office just to kind of assess what they need and then refer to our community partners and or our campus partners.
And kind of help navigate them.
Yep.
Because a lot of times, you know, people don't know what they don't know. So that's a great service that you provide for them.
Yep. It's that connector piece, that warm handoff.
Right. Yeah. No. And I think that makes all the difference in the world to be able to do that. People need that support. And so that's a good thing. What do you like most about what you do here at LCC?
I think the biggest thing is being able to be part of helping change systems, helping change whatever is going on with the student, help solve their problems. I call myself the problem solver. I like to solve issues to kind of help students navigate systems. So
we're going to start calling Sophia Olivia Pope. You're going to fix her, kind of trying to help students.
Trying, yeah.
Right. Well, at least they have someone to go to, someone to talk to, someone to problem solve. And that's so important. You know what I mean? Just to have that access. I think that's great. Why are you so passionate about this job?
I think the biggest thing is I'm from the community. I grew up here. I know what it's like to be here, but I also know what it's like to be a first generation student. I know what it's like to navigate a system that, you know, at times didn't feel like it was built for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just kind of want to pay it forward. I had an amazing opportunity when I came to LCC. I got involved with Trio, Lucero, and those are my families here at LCC. So I always told myself, like, if I have opportunity to go back to higher ed and work with these students, that's what I wanted to do.
Yeah, because those are, you know, broader-based programs, but they help students that go there. All those places you were welcome, right?
Yes.
Because I know I would go up to Lucero, and, you know, it was other people there that had concerns or alignments, but I always felt welcome.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I would go to the office, and, like, to me, if you're someone and you don't really speak English that well, like in Lucero, you know, people were speaking Spanish, you had that opportunity, I'd just be sitting there trying to figure out, but it was fun, right?
Yeah.
Like, it was a welcoming place, and I like those things where we got those places where people can come and feel welcome, so, and,
yeah.
it impacted you so much
yeah.
that you came back.
Yeah.
That's super cool. What's life like for you outside of working at LCC?
It evolves to rambunctious children. From when I walk out of the door, when I get home, I'm full face with my 3-year-old and 6-year-old.
Ooh, you got little ones.
I got little ones, yep. They're rambunctious. They like to do fun stuff outside. So when I'm not working, I'm with them.
Wow.
They're my everything.
I know they are. And they take everything, too. Mm-hmm. They gonna make sure they get their time, like, that's so cool because you have to really, with our jobs, you give a lot, right? You know, we give a lot to our students. We feed in them and we give a lot of ourselves to try to make them successful. And then you got to go home because 3-year-old and 6-year-old, they're not buying, I'm tired. So you have to still be that person. So my hat is off to you. I noticed that you said you have a degree in social work.
Yeah.
Is that from Michigan State?
That's from Michigan State.
Okay, I forgot to mention that because I have my social work degree too. I wanted to know, how does social work play a role in your job that you do now?
It's a lot. So it's about, you know, the coordination piece is a lot. And it's also really about how I have conversations with students. So when we're talking about special populations, we're talking about vulnerable populations of students. And also, they're not coming to me because they're okay. They have other things that are going on. So, you know, being able to have tough conversations and being able to have the privilege to kind of like, thank you for sharing that information with me, it all goes back to my social work training.
Yeah, I think that my training in social work has prepared me just for building rapport, you know, having those conversation, asking certain questions. I really think higher ed and social work, there's a good merging of skills and how it benefits to have that social work degree and move into different higher ed, especially student services positions. It definitely make a difference. Just curious, do you think you'll go back and get your master's degree?
I do, and I think I'm going to hopefully go back here soon. I'm not going to give a date because then that puts parameters
right.
back.
No,
but
yeah.
Yes, I am. It's definitely something I want to do, and it's time.
Yeah, and it's time when it's time, and you have young children, and you got to do what you got to do. But I just think that you really do well with counseling and helping people and, you know, doing what you do now, but also working in private practice or do whatever. You just have that good centered feeling when I come around you, like students will feel comfortable and that they can talk to you. And that's a good skill to have. So let me see. Do you volunteer at all? And if you do, why do you do it? And what do you do?
I don't volunteer as much as I used to because I have two little ones at home. But before I was really, really, like, I love to volunteer. I love to get involved. It kind of keeps me centered. It keeps me humble. But before my children, I was heavily involved with Big Brother, Big Sister. And it's kind of making me feel old now because I still keep in contact with my littles and they're grown adults. And I'm like, oh my God,
they're
not little. And it's astonishing how we've been able to maintain these relationships with each other. And so I've been able to see, you know, how they've grown since they were 13. And now, you know, they're in their early 20s. And I'm like, oh, my God, it's crazy.
Yeah, that is a transition that you can see, especially. And that's an important time. And it brings me back to your previous job when you were working as an outreach. Explain that job a little bit to me, if you don't mind.
Sure. So there's lots of avenues of outreach, but what I would do is I would go out with a team and oversee a team that would go out and work with street youth to get them off the streets. So we would literally go into the woods and, you know, look for young people, going into shelters. We'd have strong relationships with the community partners to say, hey, we see a young person here. You want to come chat with them? The city, the police department. We had very strong relationships, and we wanted to make sure that if we knew a youth was outside, we would go out there to connect with them.
Wow. That's super cool. But I can see how those skills could transition into what you're doing now, and because I'm pretty sure you've seen everything.
I've seen a lot.
Most everything.
I've seen a lot.
Yeah. And so you can work with someone where they are.
Yep. Meet them where they're at.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a good thing. And I think a lot of times people are scared when they come to meet with us that we don't know that people have lives and have lived and they went through things but now they're trying to do something different. So yeah. I think that's because I'm getting to know, I know Sophia, but like not really like all of the interesting stuff that you guys are finding out. I'm kind of finding out too at the same time. So I just think it's cool because that's not an easy job. It doesn't sound like
No, it was very heart-wrenching, especially knowing that there's a 16, 17-year-old living out on the street, and some of the youth wouldn't because of the trauma they had and because of the systems that they were part of, they felt defeated.
Right.
And so they couldn't trust anybody. And so just, you know, my always go to, because I'm a person that likes to eat, I like food, is I'm like, did you eat today?
Right.
Are you hungry? Something so low barrier, but an opportunity to start a conversation.
Yeah. And, you know, hey, what do they say? Maslow hierarchy of needs.
Mm-hmm.
You got to start with those
basics.
Feeding, hungry, safety, and all that stuff. So, yeah, I think that's a good fit. I think when they saw that MERS with those special populations, you've already been dealing with special populations prior to this role. So I think that's a definite great fit. Well, do you live by any piece of advice or a motto?
Oh, I have a couple.
Okay.
I do. And so one of the biggest ones is that I would, and I'll give you a little synopsis of a story that I would use this motto for all the time, is that out of everything in this world, you know, there's things that can be taken away from us. It can be taken, our home can be taken away, everything can be taken away from us. But the one thing that cannot be taken is what we instill in our mind.
Mm.
And so I always tell students, I'm like, you gotta, you know, if anything else, you gotta feed that brain. You gotta feed that knowledge, because that's the only thing that people cannot take away from you.
Right. That's true.
And so that's the motto I live by. When it comes to education, when it comes to life, when it comes to knowing systems, that's how I live mine. And then the other motto, which you'd have to know my dad to really truly get this concept, but he would always tell me, he's like, Sophia, if you go to class and you don't know what's going on in that class and you walk out, You're giving yourself a disservice. You owe it to yourself to go back in, because those people are getting paid to take care of you, to teach you, and you're losing your money. You want to lose your money? And of course, we never want to lose our money.
Right.
So I always make it a point when I was in school, anytime I'm in a training, I always ask questions, because I'm not walking out of the room without knowing what I need to know.
Exactly. You want to build that muscle brain.
Exactly.
And keep it going. No, I think that's cool, because really, at the end of the day, knowledge is power, and you can make and change. Like, that's what I'm finding, and it's frustrating. People nowadays don't take the time to read.
Yeah.
And the answers can be right there, but you would rather me tell you who I could misinform you, but you could read it yourself. And know, and then ask questions about what you don't know or don't understand. But yeah, I agree with your dad. Like, it's your responsibility to know the things that you need to know. And if you don't know or you don't understand, it's your responsibility to try to find those answers.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's going to help you in just navigating life in general.
Right.
Finding those answers. And like you said, you know, your house is gone, but they can't take away from you how to figure out how to get another house, right? Maybe I need more money. Maybe I need this, but you could still come back from that.
Yeah.
Okay, daddy, with the good, get your money worth, making sure that you get what you pay for. I think that's a good motto. What's one thing that can instantly make your day better?
Oh, definitely. And this might change as I get older. I know we will navigate it as a system when my children get older, but just getting home and getting hugs and kisses. I could have a rough day and just knowing that they're waiting for me at home and be like, Mom, you know.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Kids kind of do that, right? Like, it's about them, right? And you need to get on their page. But they love you, and you're so much their world that it's just like, oh, I forgot all the stuff that was going on
because
my babies is here now.
Yeah.
Do you want more? I don't mean to be in your business, but do you think you'd have more?
I don't. don't know about more like me actually physically birthing another child, but I think in the future it might make sense to kind of look into adoption. Or I definitely am thinking about, I have two little boys.
Oh.
And so I'm like, I kind of would love to have a little girl, but I don't know. We'll see. Time will tell.
And I was just saying that because it seems like you've been mentoring children all your life, right? So you've worked with youth. You've worked in different areas where you've had young people that you've dealt with and worked with them. So it seems like that's something that you like. And sometimes people like that and carry it over in parenting. But no, I'm just curious.
Yeah.
And you say two little boys, huh?
Two little rambunctious boys. It's fun.
Oh, yeah. So you're the queen in the house with your males, huh?
Yeah, I am. I have my husband and my two boys. It's fun.
Yeah. Hey, I say it's my way or the highway, little guys. That's funny, though. Thinking about what you've done previously in your work, what was your first job?
Oh, my goodness. My first job, I worked at Chuck E. Cheese.
Kids again.
Yes, kids. I worked at Chuck E. Cheese, and, yeah, it was kind of everything. So I think it used to be called, like, a kid check person. Maybe they still do that, where they just stamp your hand. And so I did that, and I was like, yeah, making my $5.75 an hour. I was like, yeah. You know, yes. My $150 checks are every night were nice, you know. I enjoyed it. I did not like dressing up as Chucky. That was not very fun.
Oh, you had to do that too?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Okay.
It was not fun. On two reasons, that it didn't smell the best. And kids are cruel. They would punch you. They'd be like, Chucky's not real. I'm like, okay, if you know Chucky's not real, don't punch Chucky. Because Chucky, there's somebody here.
Right. Someone's in the zoo.
But yeah, it was a great first job, and I really liked it. I still actually keep contact with the managers that used to be there. And every now and then I'll see them. But yeah.
Yeah, because I really think that you got to have a heart for working with children and young people and stuff like that. Like, you really have to be passionate about it. But you started out in the trenches as Chucky, because when they kicking you, you know, you got to have patience. You got to not, you know, do something to somebody when they kicking you and hurting you and doing something like that. And then the kids are scared of Chucky, too. So you got one end, they want to fight Chucky, the other end, they running from Chucky.
Right.
So I think that's cool. I think that led to you, your life of...
Yeah, of working with kids. Yeah. And oddly enough, like, I enjoy elementary school age children, but my heart is really with teenagers.
It is.
I'm like, I've tried it. I don't know about young students, but
yeah. Yes. But that's the hardest population, those teenagers.
Yeah,
that young adult age, and really wanting to do that. Like I said, that's not for the weak.
No,
and you have to be really intentional, and you have to really. Like you said, you have to be genuine to work with them, because you can't just come in there trying to finesse them, because you will get finessed.
Oh yeah, they're gonna clown you. They're gonna make sure that they know who you are.
For sure. Well, what are some of the best advice you have learned in your life so far, and who taught it to you?
I think probably the best advice that I had is I had a previous supervisor, and she knows who. She's just fantastic. I've had the privilege of kind of working in different ways. So I was a regular team member, a team lead, and then a supervisor. And I'm a worker bee. I like to get things done. I'm a person of my word.
You are too.
I like to, like, I'm on it.
Yeah.
And so I had this one conversation with my supervisor at the time. I'd get so bent out of shape. I'm like, why aren't they doing it the way I want to do it? Or, you know, why are they not working? Like, I've done all this, and this is, you know, they've only completed half of the task. And I never forget, she was like, Sophia, you can't compare your worth ethic to somebody else's, because you're never going to be happy. Because for some people, that's all they can give.
Right.
And that is their 100%. and you're 100%, it looks completely different. And, you know, thinking back, I'm like, okay, yeah, you know, I'm a trained social worker, I'm trauma trained. But, you know, understanding that was like the biggest clicking method is that we can't compare, because, you know, at the end of the day, you're right. Some people could, you know, their all is totally different from our all. And so that comparison is, it's null and void.
And it makes you frustrated for no reason. No, but that's a good idea, because I get like that too. I'm like, I'm putting all this work in, I'm doing all this. Well, you're choosing to, you know, this is what your standard is. Mm-hmm. You can't let anybody compromise what your standard is based off of what they're doing.
Right, exactly.
And so I think that is a good piece of advice. But it also helps you not to bang your head up against the wall comparing, like, why are you not stepping up? Why are you not doing this?
Right,
because I've done that. And I felt like I think I like that advice. So it's got me thinking about.
It definitely saved lots of conversations that I would have had with my team members, like, why aren't you doing this? But also it put into perspective of, like, everybody's different, and, you know, you have to figure out a way to where you can meet them. And it really changed how I viewed things.
Yeah. Well, I like that. I'm going to definitely keep that in mind. Our time is almost up, but I got a couple more questions that I wanted to ask you. Go blue or go green?
For sure, go green.
I already knew that, but I just wanted to say that because I love when we can say, even though we lost, I'm not going to go over that. But yeah, go green. And my last question is, what's the career highlight you're most proud of?
Just being able to create change. And I guess, no matter where I land along the trajectory of my career, it's still being a part of change that I want to see in the community, that I want to be a part of, that I leave behind for my children. And so any way that I can create change and help create change, that's what I look for.
Well, we're going to end off in that. That's a great way to end. I'm so thankful for you for coming on Who's That Star today. And audience, until the next time, you've been listening to Who's That Star. I'm Lisa A., and you can listen to this episode of Who's That Star and other shows from LCC Connect anytime online at lccconnect.org. Thank you for listening. Catch me next time to find out Who's That Star.
Keep connected with LCC Connect at lccconnect.org.
LCC
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision. Academic success is a priority at Lansing Community College. And when assistance is needed, tutoring is available to all students. Resources include quick print stations, chemistry and anatomy models, microscopes, and several other tools to help students. Tutors may also be available for pre-scheduled after-hours appointments. To find out more about tutoring services, visit lcc.edu/tutoring.
The Adult Enrichment Program at LCC offers classes in watercolor, creative welding, motorcycle safety, photography, and more. All classes are non-credit. Information about the Adult Enrichment Program is available at lcc.edu/keeplearning.
LCC
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
It's time for Stars on Sports,
a podcast radio show dedicated to sharing stories about our athletic program at Lansing Community College.
LCC Athletics has a strong tradition.
24 national championship wins.
Over 170 All-Americans.
19 MCCAA All-Sports trophies.
Stars on Sports will introduce you to individuals that have contributed to our program's success and give you the backstory on what it takes to develop it.
We'll also dive into and break down the topics and issues facing athletic departments across the nation and right here at LCC.
This is Stars on Sports.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Stars on Sports. I am joined today by our Assistant Athletic Director, Stephen Cutter, and our producer, Dedalian Lowry. And today, gentlemen, we're going to be talking about a famous quote throughout history that is applied to sports a lot, but it's actually much bigger than that, than I researched it, and it was by Theodore Roosevelt in around 1910-ish, and it's about the man in the arena.
April 23rd.
April 23rd, great day. Mm-hmm. But sports uses it a lot. You know, it's in our office. It's in your office. It's again, just prevalent in the sports world, and even heard it, in the last couple of weeks. That, again, why I bring it here is the theme that sticks out with me, because it's been on our radar for a couple weeks. And it's very interesting to me, and I like the quote. And let me read it real quick. It's a little lengthy,
It's an excerpt from a larger speech called Citizenship in the Republic.
It is, and we'll get into that. But the quote itself, this is just a small part in the first third of the speech is about it. It's not the critic that counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who's actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs to come short again and again because there is no effort without error or shortcoming, but who does actually strive to do the deeds, who knows that great enthusiasm, the great devotion, who spends themselves in a worthy cause. And again, I always looked at this, boy, that was bad reading though, but I always look at this quote about the critic. You know, I learned that really two sides of this story, and actually researching for this, I'd actually want to spend more time of talking about the person in the arena. But I think a lot of people focus on the critic, the person that just sits back there and analyzes but had never done the work. And we see that a lot in our society and social media, and especially now in our sports world and here at LCC. And that's why we tied in the Stars on Sports, because, you know, coaches are public employees. A lot of people can sit back in the bleachers and watch what they do. Our student athletes are public people, and people sit back and second guess, armchair quarterback, you know, people in the bleachers. So, but to your point, it is a much larger speech, and the speech centered around citizenship, morality, courage. You know, he was talking to France about, you know, our obligation in a society after he was done being president about doing what was right. But for some reason, this little excerpt out of a 10-page speech is what people focus on and what people in sport focus on. And I just wanted to dive into that a little more today with both of you. Because I think there is a key to both sides, the critic part, which I think where most sports people focus on because of the criticism they get. And it even talks about criticism, but it also talks about, you know, certain characteristics, courage, morality, citizenship, which are all important in our educational athletics. So any first takes on, have you heard of the man in the arena? Or
absolutely. It's in my office. Mm-hmm. And I think like you said, there's at least a couple different ways to take it. But I knew we were going to talk about this today, so I took a few notes, and I think it has to do with if you're going to dare greatly, you also have the ability to fail greatly. And it's not so much about what the other people think about your failures. If it's very much in line with stoicism and a lot of the principles there as well. But it's about what you're doing. It's not about what other people are thinking about you. It's if you do things for the right reasons, the right virtues, and you fail, it makes failing just a little bit easier because you know that you did as much as that you could, but it also means that you kind of followed the way that it should have been done, and maybe it didn't work out, and maybe some people are not going to understand the work that you put in or the, you know, the ways that you followed. But it's 100%. If you're going to go big after something, you have the failure that certainly could be there. And it's very visible in sports. When teams fail, coaches fail, athletes fail, it's also very visible in life.
And that's where critics come in. Mm-hmm. Dedalian, any quick thoughts on
that? Well, I did not know we were doing this today.
Sorry.
So I did not take notes. But I agree with Cut. And at the same time, I will find that that there's a little twist of irony that you came out the other side of what you were reading, saying, I didn't read that very well. It was what it was about.
Yeah.
So kind of humorous.
It is true. And you're right. One of the biggest points of it is to dare greatly. And he really focuses on having the courage to, the efficiency to. And we see too often in sports where people are afraid to dare greatly, that, you know, they use the excuse, I didn't give it my best, or I was hurt, or I didn't have everything, because they were afraid. It's easier to say, you know, why you didn't succeed.
Yeah, it's easier to fail.
And he spends a lot of time on laziness and easiness and calling people out for sitting back and relying on that, and has some great words throughout this, you know, sneer, you know, the key word he uses in it about just people sitting back that haven't done it, that think they can critique anyone else. And I think, wow, how appropriate is that now with social media nowadays, True. How much we see it on it. I actually don't get on social media much, but during games, I like to get on X just to see what other people are saying. And some are very funny. Some are very inappropriate. I take it for a grain of salt, but there's just so many people out there that feel they have to go on and do it. And you wonder how many have really been in the arena.
Yeah. Coach has said it, and I think it applies to that same thing too, where folks don't always live up to their potential. You've said it more than once that you don't feel like most people live up to their potential.
Yeah. I think it's going to be a challenging thing, because, you know, even as you were talking about, man, I didn't read that well. You're usually thinking about, well, what are other people going to think?
Mm-hmm.
And so you're basing it off that. And this speech is 100% about what you're doing and the work that you're putting in. And that if you do not dare greatly, you are going to regret some of this stuff, and you may fail, and failure is okay, if, as long as you put everything that you had into it and you fail, it's probably, Teddy's saying it's going to be easier to fail that way than fail by putting half effort into something.
Yeah, and I think there's so much into it to break it down, because you're right. Part of it is about daring greatly, the key word of greatly, and even for our sports teams, of having high aspirations of winning championships or being the best. And then there's the other part that Dedalia mentioned, that a word we don't like is potential, because, you know, our goal is to maximize that potential, to reach potential, and there's too many people that don't, or it's lost. So there's some of that, but there's also the character side. There's he challenges society, engagement by all, which is another big component of a team, is you're going to be more successful if all of us get engaged in our goals, and back the lofty goals. And he was challenging society as a political movement to get engaged in citizenship, get engaged, help make France a better country. By making France a better country, you make the world a better place. So there's, again, we could dive into so many little things, but, and we've touched on some of those, but the other one was citizenship, and, you know, it's okay to dare. He wants you to dare greatly, but do it with morality. Do it with courage.
Virtue.
And do it the right way, which, again, it's something we live by, something our national association lives by, our league with standards and bylaws. So it's actually a very difficult challenge. I mean, it's not just dare greatly, but, you know, there's so many parts of it that not easy.
With the virtues, we've certainly seen it in the sports world. We've seen teams that have achieved greatness. We've seen individuals in Olympics that have achieved greatness, but they've done it outside of the parameters of those rules or virtues. But, you know, and so that's more of what's being talked about in this, is, you know, do these things within certain parameters. And if you can do these things, even if you're going to have success or you're going to fail, but at least it's within the parameters of what it should be. And he kind of just stated what, you know, he thought. And this was something from 1910,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you can search Man in the Arena now, and you'll see posters. And mm-hmm. that's what I've created in my office, is a picture of a field that I used to coach at. And the Man in the Arena is hanging up, and it's not so that I can just see it, but everybody that walks by my office can see it.
And why, though? What part, like,
I think from just the coaching aspect, if you mm-hmm. if you don't dive super deep into just athletics, and you say from my perspective, from the coaching aspect, you've already hit on it. It's like, you're going to have a lot of critics. The more success that you have, the more critics you will have. The greater the team, the greater the band, the greater the individuals, that you're going to have a lot more critics. And so it's one of those things that's a reminder. It doesn't matter so much about what the critics are saying. It matters most about what you're doing. And that's why it's up there.
Yeah. And so, again, two other points I want to hit on regarding this speech. And I'm glad you said that, because my first focus was on the critic, but it is on what you're doing. And part of that is what you're doing is lessons learned through failure. He also hits on that. He talked about daring greatly and failing greatly, but there's lessons learned that you have to understand and move forward with. And that's another topic we've talked about, is having those losses, those failures become lessons and making something positive on that. So another key point I think he hits in this speech that we've also touched on before in this podcast that I'm not sure people focus enough on, because they're focusing on the critic or daring greatly, but that's only part of it. You know, we had the Mike Tyson quote about, you know, getting hit in the mouth, and that's to this too, that once you dare greatly, what's that result? And it's okay, like you said, it's okay to fail. But how do you move from there? And then the other part I wanted to touch on too, that I think he hits on, is that you talked about coaching, is if when you step into leadership, it's filled with scrutiny, criticism, and the potential to fail. And he hits on those things, and that is true. And I've talked about it before in leadership. One of my favorite quotes is, people have the responsibility to take care of themselves. Leaders have the responsibility to take care of, or the honor to take care of others. And leadership is not easy. Coaching is not easy. Being a student athlete is not easy. You know, when they're in the classroom, no one really sees how they do or don't do. But when you put them out on the court or field or course and compete against Kellogg or Jackson or Grand Rapids, people pay attention. They look at how they do. That's what leaders are faced with. And don't be afraid of that. You know, embrace it. Step up to it. But that is a part of leadership that most people don't acknowledge, and that he specifically uses that in his challenge, that back to, there are critics, there is cynicism that goes along with that. And again, so true in life and so true in sports, especially in the profession of coaching.
I think that that's one thing that I've seen through my coaching time is, you know, another thing I have in my office is a saying that says leadership has a cost. And there's a cost to leadership. And we see it. I've seen it for a few years in our program. We teach leadership. Leadership is a huge piece of what we teach in our program. Mm-hmm. And we get people to start buying into that leadership, and they start trying to lead. And the other people do not like that, because they feel like they're being picked on. They're being held accountable. And that accountability is hard at younger ages. Mm-hmm. For student athletes to accept. And so it's something that you need to keep building that muscle. But when you first start with leadership, it is very challenging, and there's a cost. You mm-hmm. get looked at differently if you're a leader than you do if you're a follower. And you get held to higher standards. And sometimes those standards are not applicable to other people by any stretch. And sometimes people are holding you to higher standards that they don't even hold themselves to those standards. And that's the cost of leadership.
And we see that, I think, with the most scrutiny with our student athletes in trying to develop leaders there. As you talk about, you teach leadership daily, weekly, and have leadership classes. And, you know, through my experience on this job, coaches that do teach leadership are more successful. And one of the, you know, core values of being successful, and we now have other coaches that have weekly meetings on leadership and take journals. And because that key component is, the team that do well and are most successful have captains or leadership on there from within that help the coach lead the team. So it's not just a coach talking or
Yeah.
Disciplining or
coach, you know, our philosophy is coach fed, player led, but it's also a bigger picture, and it's a real picture for our student athletes. They're going to be a part of teams for the rest of their lives, mm-hmm. you know, and it's not just the teams that are wearing the jerseys, it's families and it's work environments and everything else. And it's teaching them how to lead in those environments. And there's a lot of different models of leadership. It's not the leadership is not the person that's the loudest or the, you know, it, leadership can come in a lot of different forms. It can come in actions. It can come in what you say. But it's most tied into you being able to do both of those things. Your actions are matching what you're saying. And that's how you can get people to start coming along in the journey, pulling on the rope the same way and providing the same kind of actions that you're providing. And that's mm-hmm. what great teams look like. Mm-hmm. And that's also what great environments look like in the business world or in families as well. And I'll talk about like the difference between an average family and a great family, and they're both going to have the same problems. But the average one let the little things cause divides with them. And the great ones, what they do is they agree to disagree, and nothing really can get between them. And this is really the same stuff. And it's about not necessarily what other people think or what happens to you, but how you respond and what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. ERO, can you help my wife with that principle? It's okay to agree to disagree. Because I lose that battle at home. But yeah, back to ERO. But even leadership, again, the part I like about this, though, is he's being frank. He's being candid that when you step into leadership roles, there's going to be critics. There's going to be people that sit back and challenge you, sit back and don't do anything, but just, you know, everything you do could be right or wrong. And good leaders, I believe, help pull the wagon and trying to get those on board. A sales job of, you know, the more you get your critics on board, another one of my favorite quotes is we learn the most from our biggest dissenters, you know, and so, you know, it's okay to have critics, I believe. It's okay to have people, you know, he's calling out the ones that have never experienced it, which that's the next part I'd like to get into is risk taking. He says, dare greatly. And I'm not a risk taker in life. I always joke I'm an actuary's, you know, favorite. But I saw a great guiding principle a couple weeks ago that more people look back on life and regret the risk they don't take, not the failure that they made. And I think we lose that in the present moment because we get caught up in failures or being safe. And I think this speech challenges that greatly about daring greatly, and it's okay to fail greatly, that take that risk. And he uses the word efficiency, moral, and courage, as I keep saying, but about taking risk and even for our team to challenge them to we have high standards here at LCT. We want to win championships, and that's not, you know, easy or common. It is, you know, so that the dare greatly, but to take the risk to help get to those goals. And I think that's something we might get too safe in a society, or we're more worried about the outcome of failing than it is now that there's, you know, science proven that, you know what, if you fail, you're going to be okay 20 years later. You're going to regret more of not even taking that risk. So I think that is important with this speech.
And kind of my final thoughts is something I wrote down this morning, and it's really short, but I also feel like this points out how we all have our own battles. And people from the outside take a peek in and make comments and judgments about mm-hmm. those battles and what we're going through. But what they say doesn't actually matter, as they are not in the arena, your mm-hmm. arena.
Yeah. And I agree. If the shoe fits, wear it. So if their critic is right, then and fix it. But if they're just sitting back and it's not right,
right.
move on and continue to, with your right. moral compass on leading the way you should be leading.
Right. And I think that's the understanding of you're not trying to say don't take advice from somebody that's failed. You're mm-hmm. trying to say you want to take advice from mm-hmm. somebody that's failed, as long as they've stood back up and have earn their money back or earn their stripes back. Though that's the advice that you want to take from people. You don't want to take it from somebody that's had success all of their lives and had all the green lights and everything, because that's usually not realistic in our world, but you want to learn from those people that have failed and have stood back up and have done something after their failure. You can learn a ton from those types of people.
And, of course, your own failures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for both. Your own failures, your experience, but also the person in the arena that has experienced it. And that's where he's calling out is those ones that haven't. I think he respects those ones that have been in the arena and criticized, but the more vocal ones are the ones that are, you know, he uses the word lazy and, you know, other words. So I love presidential history. This is, again, one of my favorite excerpts from a speech, and I'm glad we had some great discussion on it. Any other closing thoughts on Man in the Arena? Okay. Well, I was, you know, we're going to go to our final question here now. We've been spending a lot of time on breakfast in our last couple ones, so I had one more breakfast one. But now that we've kind of done this speech, I'm going to change. I have a whole list of them here. And, you know, I asked my kid this a couple weeks ago, do you have a personal mantra, a personal saying that you live by? That, like, if you had a T-shirt made for you, what would it say? Or something that you refer to in your own mind that you kind of live by on a regular basis?
Wow. So you want us to go pretty deep here. I think if I had a shirt out, it would just say chasing greatness. Oh, and greatness is one of those things that you'll likely never, ever get to. But it's the journey, it's the chase, and you're trying to be the best that you can possibly be. And I don't think that ever ends.
Good one.
Yeah, that's thought-provoking. I was, again, not prepared for this. I'd have to say I actually have many different mantras.
Okay.
But I will say that one of the ones that I have used before, you mentioned earlier, and that is, it's better to regret something that you've done than something you have never done.
Haven't, yeah.
Okay. And all right.
The other one would be, I'm hungry.
That current, we need lunch in here or what? But mine is, and I asked my kids the other day this, and they knew it, so I felt good because I feel like that helped me that I'm leading it. And it's carpe diem, seize the day. Mm. And one of my favorite movies is Dead Poets Society, an old movie. But, you know, one of the main mantras of that movie was seize the day, carpe diem. And I like Latin phrases, too. And I try to wake up every day and do that. And I think it's important for all of us to do that. You know, we know what else we get besides the day ahead of us. So make the most of it, you know, whether chasing greatness or taking risks. You know, that's all part of seizing that day. And I do have a T-shirt that had that on there. Nice. It sits under my Ted Lasso ones now that I get a lot of compliments on. But I think it is important that we have something that we talked about waking up to a song before, but having something that we refer back to that it's our own motto to keep us moving forward. Mm-hmm. Excellent discussion today. We have a little history in here, a little sports, a little quotes. So good stuff. And until next time, go Stars.
Stars on Sports is recorded live at the WLNZ Studios. Engineering and production assistance are provided by Dedalian Lowry and Journey Robinson. You can listen to this episode and other episodes of Stars on Sports on demand at lccconnect.org. To find more information about our athletic program, visit lccstars.com. Thanks for listening. Go Stars!
Examining the issues and topics that affect our lives from the local level to the world stage. Listen to the programs of LCC Connect anytime at lccconnect.org.
LCC
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
Lansing Community College Performing Arts is proud to present Summer Stage Under the Stars, featuring a 10-minute play festival directed by Paige Dunkel and Shelley Peterson. Four impressive plays written by LCC students enrolled in Introduction to Theater and one play written by LCC employee and artist Fred Engelgau. A wonderful variety of styles and concepts for this evening of theater. Featured at LCC's Outdoor Amphitheater, July 23rd through the 27th at 7 p.m. In the event of rain or extreme heat, performances will move into Dart Auditorium. For more information, visit lcc.edu/showinfo. All performances are free to attend.
The Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council present the story of Cynthia and Ed.
My mother was always very active and independent, and she was familiar with her neighborhood. But one day, out of the blue, she stopped at the stop sign for much longer than usual. And she didn't know whether she should go forward or turn or just stay at the stop sign. She wasn't even really sure where she was at. She was very concerned. It was very unsettling for her.
It's important for you to talk to someone about it, to bring the family in on it. I felt so much better after my son told me, Mom, I don't want you to worry or be afraid. I'll be there for you and we'll figure it out.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. Visit alz.org/ourstories to learn more. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
My Next Move is an enrollment event for new and returning adult students. If you're 25 or older and thinking about taking classes at LCC this fall, the admissions office welcomes you with a chance to learn about funding opportunities, program offerings, support services, and more. My Next Move takes place Wednesday, June 25th. Register to attend at lcc.edu/mynextmove.
This is WLNZ Lansing. You're listening to LCC Connect, a weekly program that features the voices, vibes, and vision of Lansing Community College. To find out more about LCC Connect programs or to listen on demand, visit us at lccconnect.org.
LCC
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.